Hashtag psychotherapy unfucked with Mark Fielding.
Hello, and welcome to season 5, episode 10 of Hashtag psychotherapy unfucked. As you know, I'm Mark Fielding, psychotherapist and relationship counsellor and your host. Today, I have the absolute pleasure to interview Heike Knip, ADHD coach, neurodiversity trainer, public speaker, SEO specialist, PRC specialist, neurodivergent, disability advocate, and disability advisor. And if it's okay, Heike, just to read directly from your LinkedIn profile, Heike writes, I'm an ADHD coach who uses my experiences to provide coaching services. My commitment is centered around promoting inclusivity and empowering individuals with neurodiverse abilities. At The Good Consulting Company, I offer personalized coaching and support for those with ADHD and other neurodivergent conditions. Additionally, I engage in public speaking, conduct workshops, perform audits, and provide training for businesses to become more inclusive. Serving as a board member at CDKL5 Alliance, I take pride in leading meetings and serving as the primary contact for international family organizations and pharmaceutical companies. My advocacy efforts are dedicated to championing the rights and needs of individuals with rare genetic disorders. In my role at The Good SEO Company, I specialize in on-site, local, and technical SEO for clients globally. Our commitment to ethical and effective techniques ensures meaningful conversions for your business. So thank you so much for coming on, Heike. Nice to see you again.
You're welcome.
I wonder, I always kick off with the first question, asking our guests the personal experiences that led them into the field. So could we start there?
My personal experience, why I went, I will focus a bit on the neurodiversity stuff and like that. Because SEO is a little bit boring. Nobody finds that interesting. But why I did that is because I am a person who came out late as having being neurodivergent. And the thing is one of the main reasons why I do what I do is because I see this lack of experience in the field, also the support into that, especially for lived experience. Though there's more and more support coming in over the last year, I've seen more support there. But especially with the people that have been late diagnosed or accepted late that they are neurodivergent, there's a lot of trauma also with that. Some don't like to talk about it. I don't mind. You can ask me anything. I am happy to talk about it. And I find it quite important. And I just love doing it because helping other people is something I get a kick out. And also, I'm quite proud that I'm going to do something else now also. I'm going to be working with NHS with the mandatory training they have.
Oh, fantastic. This is around neurodivergence in the workplace. Yeah. Brilliant. I mean, I have to say much needed. I'm going to kind of ask you a question later around corporations and, you know, it depends on the corporation, you know, how much they are neuroaffirmative. But I just wanted to ask you kind of a little bit, could you just say a little bit around the work you do? I mean, you do a lot of different things, don't you? Could you just tell our listeners a little bit around the many things that you do?
Yeah, I, let's say with as good as with a good consulting company, let's say with that one, I offer one-to-one services for people that want coaching, mentoring, and also support. So this is, let's say if you want to have ADHD coaching, but also on the longer run, we have a look if we can support families. On the other side, we have also the B2B side. It's the business to business that is training, workshops, can also be consultations, but also audits. And also I can have a look at that from a disability perspective, from wide abroad, because I have some brilliant contacts in the disability community. One of my best friends is Isaac Harvey. He's one of the top 100 disability influencers in the UK. So these are some of the people I work with. So I work with people that are quite well known. You can't see the background, but in the background is also my daughter. She has a rare genetic disorder called CDKL5. That means she's a delay in her development, severe delay. So she's not able to walk, talk, but still she knows how to spend my money and she knows what she wants. She has an expensive hobby. She likes diamonds.
That's a very expensive hobby.
Yeah, I know. But with that, she's in a wheelchair. She needs 24/7 care. So I know also the things what goes around if you're in a wheelchair, what are the issues with that? But again, it's also I promote always you need to also listen to people that have lived through the experience. So that's sure. why I work with others. And this is also one of the reasons why I am also part of the CDKL5 UK as a trustee. I run, as you said before, I don't run. I am the chair of CDKL5 Alliance still for this year, and which I take a lot of pleasure from and gave me a lot of contact. And yeah, if people didn't figure out, I have ADHD, so I have about 50,000 things running at the same time. But I love it. And that's why I do. And it is needed, but I know you're going to ask that question in a bit, so I'm not going to go down that rabbit hole already.
I mean, I wanted to kind of just, if we can just go back a little bit. I mean, I wanted to ask you a bit more around the trauma that neurodivergent people kind of experience in society. I mean, I self-disclose, I work a lot with neurodivergent clients, you know, and I see this, unfortunately, so frequently. It's a massive area, I know, but I wonder if you could just say a little bit around what it is like for a neurodivergent living in a neurotypical world.
Oh, it is, and staying PT, it is really hard.
Yeah.
Because again, I'm born in the 80s, so I grew up in the 80s, 90s, where autism, ADHD, that was a naughty child, or that is that child. Again, still lingering things like, only white boys can have ADHD and you grow out of it.
Absolutely.
Which is all nonsense, because if you look at the wider sense of it, there's so many difference in it. Most of the trauma and like that it comes from is because we were forced to be somebody who we are not. We were told by our peers, it's like, I remember because dyslexia, I have also dyslexia and autism, just to be clear. I haven't been taught in university, it's like, oh yeah, it's nice that you have, not in that way, it's nice that you have dyslexia, but you can't make spelling mistakes. We expect you still to wear it perfectly. And I have been told, it's like, oh, you sure you have dyslexia? Because again, people think it's like everybody with dyslexia has big problems right there. My dyslexia is, let's say, I forget words in sentences, but also I have a lot of trouble getting words from my mind onto paper. I can tell anything in the smallest detail if you ask me, but if I need to write it down on a piece of paper, it's a whole different story. These things is, let's say, and you've been taught, and it's the same thing with job interviews. And I can give 100 examples, but let's keep it a bit short. If I said like, oh, I have dyslexia, they said, I get an email or a letter. I come still from the time from letters, saying, thank you for the application, but we're not going to continue. If I didn't say anything, oh, you're going to get a job. Oh, or the next round and like that. There's a lot of discrimination and like that.
So true.
And the unconscious bias, what you get then in that is like, oh, I need to be somebody else to fit in. And that takes a toll on your mental health. And it is different for everybody. But for me, my mental health really suffered over the years and became worse. I think during COVID lockdown, it increased because again, that became it worse. Secondly, is also I did mental health first aid training, figured out it ticked boxes with me. I was like, oh, this is me. So I'm happy that I did that. And that started my journey on finding out I'm neurodivergent. But it is PTSD in the form that you have. But for me, I will never get rid of my mental health issues. I learned to live with it. But the thing is also what I want to do with my business is trying to avoid that other people need to go through it.
Yeah. So
and I think that's the main goal with what I'm doing. And there's still a lot needed because there's still a lot of people that are still have the same ideas from the 80s, 90s.
There are, yeah. I mean, just to jump in, I mean, just to really resonate with what you're saying around the workplace, and you know, I mean, I have to be careful what I say, you know, but I've worked with so many clients that you know that agonise over, do they disclose, you know, their neurodivergence on an application form, you know, if they don't disclose, then they, you know, they end up perhaps getting the job and going in and you know struggling because they're trying to manage their neurodivergence and trying to mask it. If they do put it on the application form, inevitably they won't get the job. So, I mean, I know that's simplistic, but I think that is really, really common, you know. Well, and it is. Yeah,
one study, I think, and I need to follow it. I think I need to check. I think it was done by Deloitte, but I know the details of the study is. Let's say they had asked hiring managers if they would hire anybody with neurodivergency. 50% said no.
Yeah, that's appalling.
And I think that is still a lie of the other 50%, because I think only 25% would hire somebody with a neuro, because it's all the outdated ideas and like that. When I come in and give training or support to a business, I say 90% is just changing your communication and how you treat the person.
Yeah.
10% is just adaptations to the business. And most of the time, it is not that much, because one of the things what I also say is like, I'm not on a spectrum. I'm in a constellation. So I'm always different in a round circle.
Yeah.
And that's different. Some people, I can live within an office situation for a couple of hours. That's not a problem. But then I need to have also some in different area. But this is different for everybody. So, but
yeah,
most of the things is just communicating, talking, how you pass on assignments, one thing at a time, not giving 20, 30 things at the same time, and 100 things different. And just also this week, I read an article, just to say on the office bit, in the Netherlands where I come from. It's called a place called Groningen. I'm not expecting anybody to pronounce that. But they call it in Dutch prikkelarm. And that means an office with less triggers. That's a good translation. So because they having that and they see productivity increasing, and that's also one of the nice things with if you do neurodivergent communication, it increases the all productivity within the whole team. But there's still a lot to do, and mental health issues is so common within the community.
I mean so true, you know. I mean, just, I mean, in no small part of them, you know, having to mask every day. But I mean, there's, you know, there's ableism, there's often co-occurring anxiety, co-occurring depression. And, you know, I'm really resonating. I mean, this is obviously your area, not mine, but, you know, looking at offices and things, you know, to make an adjustment for somebody with ADHD, for instance, I mean, maybe you'd look at the working hours, maybe you'd look at, you know, the sensory, you know, these are not big things really for companies to change. But even though I don't know whether you'd agree with this, I kind of see that there is more information around neurodivergence out there. But for me, I think there is a hell of a long way to go. I mean, I've seen people, I mean, like ADHD is a really good example of that. There's a lot more understanding of ADHD, but there's also a lot more misunderstanding of ADHD, isn't there? It's, I don't know how you see it.
Just want to word this carefully. There is more awareness, there's more training coming out for neurodivergency, but in my honest opinion, I find several of the trainings what I've seen with neurodivergent subpar.
Okay.
Because again, they're trying to put people back into boxes. I have seen training as like people with dyslexic thinking, they are creating problem solving. Many, they use words as many, most. It's the same thing as, let's say, with ADHD. I've seen somebody writing about, most people with ADHD is full high of energy. I'm like, yeah, that's about 2 hours, and after that,
I mean, that's goodness me. I mean, that's just totally.
Yeah, but that again is putting expectations onto people that are neurodivergent. Let's say the label is like, oh yeah, everybody with autism is great in details.
Yeah.
For example, that's not true. Not everybody is the same.
No.
And that's why I talk also about the constellation on a circle diagram. It's about the same.
Yeah.
But a lot, I had already talked with a couple of employees. Oh, we hired somebody because of dyslexia, for example.
Mm.
And it didn't work out. I was, my mind went like, how did you not think about that before? It's like, who would have guessed it? Because there's so many things which you need to have a look at. Also, the personality of the person. There is a wide variety. It's like my dyslexia is not the same as somebody else's dyslexia.
No.
And the same thing is because my comorbidity is dyslexia, autism, ADHD, probably something else also because I'm a multitude. But for me, my ADHD is most of the time the more dominant one.
Yeah.
But with a good mix of the autism and dyslexia. So I'm good in certain things, but I'm horrible in other things. And that's something I advise. And that's the thing. And that's what I also said, what you wrote up. Everything what I do, training, workshops, and like that, is centered on the person.
Yes.
When people go into my workshops and ask, what is the solution? I say, talk to the person.
Yeah, I mean, it's so obvious, isn't it? But
yeah.
But yeah. I mean, it's like the I mean, this is something that I've heard quite a lot in the autistic community. You know, when you've met one autistic person, you've met one autistic person.
Yeah.
You know, but I guess but people are, I mean, again, I'm choosing my words really carefully because, I mean, it makes me quite angry, really, you know, some of the stories that I hear, that the people are just, their individuality is often stripped away from them. You know, if they say, oh, I'm an autistic, people have all these weird preconceived ideas and stereotypes, and immediately the person loses their kind of individual identity. I mean, that happens often. I would say, you probably have to be careful about how you respond, but how open are companies, would you say, generally, in terms of, you know, being neuroaffirmative workspaces and the training that you offer? And
I think companies are getting more aware about it, let's say, but do they take it serious? I don't think so.
Yeah, okay.
Because I think a lot of businesses still think it is just a small group of the population.
Yeah.
When I start talking about the numbers, if you follow current studies, it is more than likely that 1 in 4 of the people in the UK are neurodivergent.
Yeah.
When I started reading on it, it was 1 in 7.
Yeah.
And it is getting more and more every year. And that's the thing is, let's say 75% of people with ADHD don't know they have ADHD.
No.
Because again, they think, it's the funny thing sometimes also when I talk with parents of kids with ADHD or something like that, just having a chat. And then you see them thinking, it's like, oh, I'm doing that. It's mostly genetic. So
yes, yeah.
Because we have the stereotype of idea is, let's say, this is somebody, it's like what you said also before, this is somebody with ADHD, this is somebody with autism. So many businesses don't understand that it's such a wide subject that needs to be trained about. It is good.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying it's like you need to do training every month on it, but it is good to do every year.
Yeah, great.
It's the same like mental health first aid training. It's such an essential thing to have because you learn more about certain behaviors and like that, why somebody is, let's say, I don't like it when the supermarket reshuffles everything in there.
No.
It causes panic with me.
Yeah.
I just go in, get what I need and run out. And then the next time I'm more prepared. So let's say I know why they're doing it for marketing reasons, because people need to have a look.
Yeah.
But what you can do, let's say, I use that always as an example, is like put signs where you want to move it to.
Yeah.
Yes, you will not help everybody. But again, you doing a big group of people. Secondly, it is also good for your marketing because you have a sign, oh, butter is coming here, and then somebody walks by, oh yeah, I need butter. So businesses need to take more action about being neuro-inclusive.
Yeah.
And they need to source. And the one tip that I always give to businesses, work with people that have lived experience.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely.
Not with something what comes from a textbook or from a piece of paper. And I'm not saying the trainers are horrible people that give that and that are not lived experience.
No.
But I would say 90% of the training and what I can't give is lived experience. 10% is just facts.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, the lived experience does seem really, really important. I mean, that kind of leads me into something. I wanted to ask you specifically, well, ADHD coaching, again, you know, we could spend hours probably talking about this, but could you give our listeners an idea around what, depending on the person you're working with, what that would tend to look like?
ADHD coaching, it can be quite a wide subject because, again, it depends on the person.
Of course.
But we're having a look, let's say, in simply form, it said is you want to get somewhere within an X amount of time. It can be 6 months, can be a year, can be 10 years.
Yeah.
It needs to be realistic and it needs to be focused. And the part of the coaching is we're having a look. It's, I never liked the word, but it is in fact a SWOT analyze. We're having a look where your strengths, where your weaknesses, where your strengths and opportunities. And then we're having a look how we can empower you to making the right decisions of getting there within the part of with ADHD, because we just focus where you struggle with. Is let's say for myself, example, I am horrible in administration and follow up on that. So one of the things what I'm looking at is getting more support in my business, supporting me with those things. And that can be a solution, but another solution can also be specialized support, getting another coach or mentor in for that specific.
Yes. Yeah.
So the ADHD coaching, what I give is just to give more clarity through the basis of lived experience, the things where I went through. And also just to say with the coaching, sometimes I turn people away because I don't think I am the correct person for that.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. It's kind of similar to the therapy model. You know, one therapist can't work with everyone. You know, I mean, it is dependent on the kind of relationships, you know. And then some of it will be signposting. Okay. I mean, so maybe if someone needed support with, I don't know, managing finances, then maybe you might signpost to someone that would be able to help them, particularly for that area. But again, it is all dependent on, I guess, the individual's needs, really.
Yeah, it is the individual needs. Depends on where they want to be. Is let's say if they say, I want to have a more successful business. Yes. Okay. Within a year.
Yeah.
We can have a look at that. Or they want to find work within a year. And the thing is like, I'm just a part of the support. There is a wider package. It's the same thing is sometimes people talk about ADHD coaching and mental health, but I find it two separate things.
Okay.
And I don't think also a coach should be giving mental health support. They can talk about their own in certain subjects, but I think that is a specialized subject what needs to be always talked with, especially because it can be so many things. But again, it can be something within the coaching that you say, like, okay, to get you there, you need to do that. So yeah, it is important, but yeah, it can go all the place everywhere, everywhere depending on the person. Again, people
and absolutely hear what you're saying. I mean, you know, I mean, often in the kind of therapeutic model, you know, we'd be working with trauma, and these are, again, this is simplistic, you know, but I'm just pulling kind of, you know, one an experience maybe people with neurodivergence have at school. I mean, something that I hear a lot is bullying at school, you know, difficulty at school, being othered, you know, and goodness me, and, you know, a neurodivergence being undiagnosed and discovered when people are middle-aged. I mean, that is so common, isn't it? You know, I mean, and even trying to get a diagnosis, you know, there's more kind of information out there. But some of the waiting lists are like 2 years, 3 years. I mean, it really is astonishing, isn't it?
Yeah. Oh, 2-3 years is quite short nowadays.
Yeah, is it? Yeah, staggering.
Five, 5-7 years is more the standard now in the NHS.
Yeah.
And if you're lucky, because I know also camps in Surrey, I don't know if they still have, but they temporarily they shut down assessments for children. So no kid without really severe issues could get an assessment for ADHD or autism. Yeah. So that's why you also see all these private autism and ADHD clinics popping up.
Yeah.
To fill in that gap. But yeah, it is a shame that it needs to be all like this, but it's, let's say, there are people helping and trying their best to... But also, one advice what I do give with people, if you're ever going to work with a coach, always make sure you have an introductionary call.
Yeah,
just have a discovery call. Go with your gut feeling and listen to how they provide coaching. I'm always honest about how I provide coaching. Then people can make their own decision. And one of the things what I always say to people, talk to one or two more coaches than just me.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's something I always tell to people that come to my practice as well. I mean, it's really helpful, I think, to interview a few people, because the relationship is so important. I mean, you have to be working for someone that, you know, that you feel comfortable with, I mean, apart from kind of anything else. I mean, I'm just talking about kind of the private clinics. I mean, I saw, I think it was a Panorama program, and they were talking about ADHD in the private clinics. And I guess the suggestion was that these private clinics were diagnosing people with ADHD that haven't got ADHD, you know. But again, you know, I look at the discrimination there, because I mean, for me, I think, you know, if someone is going to spend £1,000 or £2,000 to have a private diagnosis, you know, it's pretty likely they've got ADHD, isn't it? So probably people are getting diagnosed because they have got ADHD. But even with that program, I just felt it was quite unbalanced. I mean, what's your feeling about the private sector kind of getting involved in this?
Yeah, to be honest, the Panorama program I refuse to see, because I have my objection against how they did their research, because it was quite one-sided.
Yeah, it was.
But saying that, yes, there are a lot of sharks also out there that are abusing the system and abusing people's money. I do have sometimes, just let's say, you can't do everything online. Sometimes you just need to have that face-to-face conversation and like that. It's not a severely regulated market, because again, people can go private, but there are caveats also with it. NHS doesn't always accept them.
No.
So sometimes you stop getting private prescriptions with an additional cost to it.
Yeah.
I think, it's just, you have great private assessment companies that give perfect. You will always find the ones in between that abuse the system, of course.
Yeah. Okay.
Like what I said. But it shows you also there is a need for better assessments within the NHS, better support, getting better understanding why. And the thing is, let's say, when people say like, all the private is not correct, because that again causes also trauma with people, because then they say like, is my paper real? Is that not?
Yes.
I'm also a big supporter in, as long as people did their due diligence correctly, it's like self-assessment is a valid form. Unless, not, let's say, saying it's like, I forgot my keys once a year and I think I have ADHD. But let's say doing your studies, having a look at the list of the conditions and like that. Because again, certain mental health issues we accept when the person says that.
Definitely, yeah.
So we need to have a better look at that also, because for me personally, a piece of paper doesn't make a difference. I know who I am.
Yeah.
For me, that is certain. I know for certain people, that piece of paper, that certificate, showing that they have ADHD, autism, is important for them. Because again, especially the ones on a later age that got diagnosed or found out, it's a layer of protection.
Yeah, absolutely. Access to validation. Services.
So it is essential. So if you take that away and say private is not works, gives the other effect also. But looking into and maybe better regulate the private assessment market, I think is also a good idea.
Yeah, because I hear what you're saying. Yeah, I guess there are sharks in that market as well. And, you know, and I also resonate with what you're saying about the piece of paper. You know, I mean, even in, I mean, this was a question I was going to ask you, Heike, because even in terms of, I mean, there's ambivalence around self-diagnosis as well, isn't there? I mean, I hear a lot of negative, you know, I hear kind of comments like, oh, everyone's got ADHD and every, you know, so... Even because for me, I think I agree with you. Self-diagnosis, I think, is fine because individuals know themselves, don't they? But the, even in terms of that, there is so much discrimination, isn't there? I don't know whether you feel the same.
Oh yeah, this within the community and outside of the community, there's discrimination of that for sure. And this is something, is let's say, I don't mind going on public speaking or talking in front of people or talking about it. I know some people will attack me on it and saying it's like what you said, yes, everybody has ADHD suddenly nowadays, let's say like that.
I've read that in newspaper. I mean, that is a common, awful statement, but it's a common statement, yeah.
It is something silly. And
yeah.
But the thing is, again, coming back to the statistic that 75%, and this is a conservative study, and they're still doing it, that people with ADHD don't know they have ADHD. So there's a big group. It's the same thing as, let's say, somebody used as an example, before the 50s, 60s, you had to write right-handed. You were not allowed to write left-handed.
Yes.
But suddenly when you had people were allowed to write left-handed, everybody suddenly is like, oh, I'm left-handed.
Yeah.
The thing is also what people need to realize, yes, we have now a big curve going up about people getting or and finding out that they have ADHD, autism, or something like that. Yeah. It's because we're getting more aware about it. We're getting more information about it. Yes, of course, there will be people that don't have ADHD and they think they have ADHD, but that's a minority.
Yeah.
Most of them, they have. And yes, it will go up a bit more, but then it starts settling down because you will not get over the next 20 years that every year it's going to double.
No.
We're going to see, I think, if I did my maths right, I forgot how many people with ADHD in the UK, but let's take, just for the ease of it, 2.5 million. If we would have 2.5 million people in the UK with ADHD, it would mean if there's another 75%, 10 million in total.
Yeah, yeah.
So, and I believe the whole total would be maybe around 15, 16 million if we include that. And that will make also that neurodivergency is about 25% of the population.
Yeah, yeah.
So... yes, and people will still be sure because people don't like change also. Suddenly it's like hearing, oh, good God, there's more people with ADHD. Sometimes it's also coming home to them a little bit too close. Again, they're still in the masking process and saying it's like, oh, no, not me. And like that. It is really a subject I can talk hours about it.
Yeah.
And I think the albinism, the self-albinism within is not good. But also I know within the community, sometimes it has to do also because of not self-albinism that I already said, but about the flight, freeze, fight mode.
Yeah.
Because, just coming is, let's say, why is everybody is like... And the same way it's self-diagnosis, it's taking away their protection and they think like they're not to say that they think they're unique, but they feel it's like, oh, we fit in a small community or different other reasons.
Yeah.
Why? So there's a ton of things which you need to look at it and there's a ton of reasons why. And every time if I talk with more people that are neurodivergent, the more I learn about it. It is not something...
No.
Easily wrapped around in one thing.
No, and it's so true what you say. I mean, the numbers of neurodivergent people in society are vast, and why wouldn't they be? I mean, we're all so different. We're different neurotypes, different. I mean, there's so much difference, and I guess when I really like it when you talk about a constellation, that really fits, I think. I wanted to ask you a little bit about your public speaking. Goodness me, I knew we were going to run out of time quickly. But could I ask you, tell our listeners a little bit about your public speaking, because this is another thing that you do a lot, isn't it?
Yeah, it is the public speaking. I'm really picking up on it this year. It actually, there's a funny story behind it because I used to hate it.
That would be common.
I used to hate it, but end of last year, I stood in front of 140 or 150 scientists, researchers, and like that. I have my phone. I have always fidget toys now. It helps me to concentrate a bit, but I loved it, and that made a change in my mind. And I'm going to do it more and more now. And I talk in front of people now with more confidence. I don't have yet the big TEDx talks and like that. You never know.
No, possible. Yeah.
But I am looking forward. I have a couple of things in the pipelines what looks interesting. So hopefully I can share that soon on the LinkedIn. But the thing is let's say with public speaking, you can inspire a lot of people in one time. And
Yes,
that's what I love
true.
about it.
Yeah.
And the thing is let's say one thing, if anybody wants to think about public speaking, do a subject where you're passionate about. Don't
Yeah.
talk about something you don't like. And be yourself. The thing is let's say I do public speaking for my own neurodivergency and also for my daughter. If I talk about public speaking, let's say about my daughter, I mix it with a bit of humor also. I talk about the lows where she went through
Yeah.
and everything. So she had quite a couple of health scares, etc., because of her condition. But then I talk also about her love of diamonds and spending my money. So it's getting that. And
Yeah.
I like to connect with people and I love to share it. And people need to come out of a room that are not thinking it's like, oh, we heard another person talking about neurodivergency. I want them to leave there. It's like, I learned something.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's like, and the thing is, it's like when I stand on that stage, I talk about everything.
Yeah.
If people ask me anything, I will talk about everything because I am not ashamed to talk about substance abuse and like that.
Yeah.
When I was younger, I used to drink too much because, again, now I know because it calms down my brain because of
Like
the
so
ADHD.
common. Yeah, so common. Self-medication, isn't it? Really common.
It's a bad form. And but if I don't talk about it, nobody will talk about it.
Yeah.
But I don't see also that everybody needs to talk about it because I know not everybody wants to talk about it because
Yeah.
they feel ashamed. They think it's like, oh, people will think I'm an alcoholic now. I'm
Yeah.
like, no, you're not.
Yeah. But it's so inspiring. I mean, here to hear someone speak, with personal experience, around the whole area, I think must be very, very inspiring, and then the way you speak. I mean, you are very, very inspiring. So I can see how that work is incredibly important. I mean, I always ask our guests kind of at the end of the show what their coping strategies are to sustain good mental health, what they do. What do you do generally to sustain good mental health?
Always say the caveat again, it's different for everybody.
It is, yeah.
For me, the biggest change for my mental health is myself understanding. I understand my body now more. I know when I step away. Need to say also my daughter helped a lot because of all the things where she went through. I accepted it much quicker than other people and
Yeah.
got through it. But also it's let's say, yeah, just taking more time for yourself and taking the step back sometimes helps with me. And the second thing is like what I say to people, it's like I don't try to manage or control my mental health issues. I learn to live with it.
Yeah.
It's the same thing as, let's say,
Yeah.
because of masking of 30 odd years, I learned to live now also with my neurodivergency. It's like accepting who I am and like
Yeah.
that. And that made a big change for me. Other things is like, yeah, I go walk, I go things and like that. I enjoy life more. I'm going to be traveling more in the coming years. So taking my steps and also looking at within my business, where are my strengths, where are my weaknesses?
Yeah.
And then in the coming year, I'm going to be filling them in with people to support in those roles, because else I don't get fun out of it anymore. So why should I do it?
Yeah.
So it's really looking at yourself, what works best. Also, running can be helpful, just getting out, just Definitely. Exercising.
Yeah.
And especially for me in the beginning, therapy helped. I did cognitive behavioral therapy that yeah. made me think about where it's coming from. It was a bit the eureka moment. It's like finally chipping away from that barrier around my neurodiversity.
Yes.
Like that. But talking therapy in the beginning also. Just having that conversation with an independent person,
yeah.
getting more conversation and confirmation, it made such a big difference for me. And I'm quite happy with that.
Yeah.
But there's still a lot of work to do.
I mean, there is. I mean, if people want to get hold of you and for anything that you do, and obviously we'll put our links up with the show notes and on our social media platforms, but what's the best way that they can get hold of you? I can...
Oh, through LinkedIn, or just email yeah. me at hello@thegoodconsulting.co.uk.
Yeah.
It's on the website. Yeah. Many ways you can contact me. I normally, yeah. but email and just sending a message through LinkedIn would be the best.
Yeah.
Because I'm not always able to answer the phone.
Yeah, sure. And then just as a final question, this is such a huge area. So difficult to, you know, to cover it in any detail at all in 40 minutes. But is there anything that you would like to say at the end that maybe I've not given you the opportunity to?
Oh, I think there's 100,000 more things we can talk about.
There are.
No, but I think we touch base on most of the essential bits and pieces. The only thing is, let's say I just repeat a bit. I think businesses, and I think that's also a focus where I'm going to go more on in the coming years.
Mm-hmm.
I think businesses need to take neurodivergency more serious.
I absolutely agree. You know, and to, you know, and part of that, you know, in terms of business, I mean, this is not why businesses should do it, but it's going to improve the bottom line, isn't it? Because, I mean, let's look at the strengths of neurodivergent people and how businesses can benefit from those strengths by making some slight changes.
Oh, for sure. And the thing is also, for example, I get small businesses sometimes saying, let's say, why is it important for my business? Because I don't hire anybody. I say, but you still have people that you work with as clients.
Yeah, of course.
So
yeah.
it's quite important, even if you're a small shop owner. And that's also why sometimes I try to offer group training sessions so that businesses locally can group up, do the training and like that. But again, they don't always see the necessity of it.
No. I see what you mean. So you see, you're trying to educate them in terms of the fact that it's even necessary, really. Yeah.
So there's still a lot of work to do within the coming years within the sectors. And there's a lot of things that needs to be done and other things. But yeah, we will get there. It's just awareness, training, understanding that needs to come. And I will be on the forefront of pushing that.
Yeah.
And I won't give up until the die. I mean, between six planks and somewhere buried.
No, absolutely. I mean, that's a nice place to finish. I just want to thank you so much. I'm so chuffed to have you on the show, Heike. It's been great. And thank you so much for coming on.
You're more than welcome. And thank you for having me. It was a pleasure.
And once again, I'd like to really thank Heike for coming on the show. It's such an enormous area, obviously, but I was glad that we were able to touch on different areas of Heike's knowledge around neurodivergence, neurodiversity, in both his professional life and personal life. It is such an incredibly important area that I do intend to cover neurodivergence, neurodiversity again. Hopefully a couple more times before the end of season five. We have time because generally we put out around about 20 episodes, maybe sometimes more, sometimes maybe slightly less per season. Really chuffed to have, you know, Heike on the show. Brings so much experience and works in so many different areas. So really, really interesting show. I mean, as always, the time just flew. You know, I looked at the clock and 40 minutes had gone, and we'd only touched on, you know, a few areas. But nevertheless, you know, we touched on a lot of important areas. Neurodivergence much more in the public eye now. But as Heike said, there is still an incredibly long way to go in terms of inclusion, stigma, and I guess societal, social construction around what it is to be neurodivergent, you know, despite it being incredibly common. I mean, we are all so individual, aren't we? Great show. Really, really enjoyed talking to Heike. We've got some brilliant shows coming up. We're one of the shows we're going to have return guest and friend to the show, Giovanna Hammond, coming on, talking about her latest film, Mask of Darkness. The premiere is sold out, I believe. That will be coming on sometime after the premiere, which I believe is on the 14th of April. Really great to have Giovanna back on talking about her film. And as always, you know, the film is in a very, very important area. And we will be interviewing some of the cast as well, which I'm really looking forward to. Regular listeners will remember that we had the cast and Joe on talking about his latest film in season 4, which was a really enjoyable episode, although very confusing for the host with so many people on the Zoom call. But it was something that I really, really enjoyed, and it'd be really nice to see Giovanna again. As I always say, you know, if you want to see the videos from season 5 and a few from season 4 are on YouTube, hashtag psychotherapy and fog Mark Fielding. The YouTube channel doing a little bit better, but, you know, the numbers are absolutely nothing like our audio channel. But if you do want to see the videos, you know, do have a look. Please like, please subscribe. And also, if you're listening on audio, please do subscribe. Subscriptions, so, so important to us in many, many different ways. I'm hoping to put the next show out probably in the next couple of weeks. I'm doing some initial pre-show interview, well, not interviews, pre-show chats with some fascinating guests. Hopefully, coming on to talk about areas that we've never discussed. On the show. So really, really looking forward to that. And thank you, all our listeners. Thank you for listening. We really appreciate you listening to the shows. I hope you're enjoying season 5 as much as I am. And as always, do look after yourselves, look after each other, and look after the planet. And I'll see you all really soon on the next episode. Thanks for listening. Thanks again for listening to the show. If you have been affected by any of the topics on this show or any other of our shows, if you're in the UK, then please reach out. Samaritans can be contacted on 116 123. Now, the GP is also a good source of contact and can be the gateway for, you know, counselling services and other mental health support. Reach out to your mental health support team, mental health first aider, or trusted friend, colleague, or family member. We have a lot of international listeners. So if you're listening from a non-UK country, then please reach out to, you know, your country's healthcare and mental health care providers. And remember, it's okay not to be okay.
Hashtag psychotherapy unfogged with Mark Fielding.